Rob. It's real obvious when fancy Transition Dan is not around.
This is true.
Mr. Fancy Trans, Transition Dan. It's just us, you know, bopping our heads to the sound, waiting for the algorithm to share with the people. We're live. Welcome to the Common Good Podcast, everybody. Wednesday, but we're going to talk politics like it was yesterday, because after the sun went dark, who knows? Who knows what makes sense in the world anymore? Our first post-eclipse podcast.
Yeah. What was your, I know a little bit, but tell the folks about your eclipse experience, Doug.
I chose to go to the Rio Grande River, pronounced Rio Grande, if you're in the Rio Grande region.
Like Ariana Grande?
Yes, yes. And I don't know how do you, I don't order that size at the Starbucks. What is it, Grande? Grande? Is that the size of Starbucks? Do they pronounce it Grande?
Venti?
Venti, Grande.
Tall? Large?
Tall? Tall, Grande, Venti. Aren't those the sizes? Somebody should let us know in the comments. it's not that I do go to Starbucks. I just always get the big one. Always.
Yeah.
That kind of personality. Yep. But anyway, we chose to go down to the Eagle Pass, Texas, which for the United States of America was the first place where the shadow of totality, I mean, what a great phrase, right? The shadow of totality could be the name of our first album. With the shadow of totality was going to come through Eagle Pass, Texas first, after spending significant time in Mexico. So the first place you could experience it would be in Eagle Pass, Texas, if you wanted to be on U.S. soil. And then it was going to stretch across the country, Arkansas, where you are, and other places, all the way up to Maine, and then off into the ocean, I think, and then went away. And I chose to go down there for a whole lot of reasons, some friends, the work that we do, border issues that we do. And it was just lovely. I ended up going across the river into Piedras Negras, which is the town, the Mexican town, the kind of sister cities, just a short little walk across. Hey, and here's the thing, Rob. You're in the United States. There's an international bridge, cars, trucks, and then just a walking path. You just walk in. You just say hello to them. They send you through a very basic detector, and you walk right in. Walk right in. Sit right down. Right, they really care about your hair over there. Not a care in the world from anybody. It was almost as if the border was open. And then we just turned around, came back the other way, and then we're coming back to the United States. The people inspected us pretty aggressively in comparison. Wanted to see ID, wanted to check, see what's in our bags, all the rest of it. But anyway, just strolled right into Mexico. We'd done this over the course of a couple of days. So I ended up not watching the eclipse in the United States of America. I guess technically I did not end up watching the eclipse from the land of Mexico. I watched it from the international border with my feet in the Rio Grande River. It was spectacular. And there was all kinds of worry about clouds because I don't know how many days, 12 days a year, Eagle Pass, Texas, has some cloudy weather, some ridiculous small number like that. One of them was Monday. It was overcast. And leading up to it for the hour and a half of, you know, the eclipse slowly coming into being, we would have maybe 20 or 30 seconds where we could see the sun, and then it would be covered by the clouds. Really, really disappointing. And then at 1:26, with totality happening, I think 45 seconds into the 27th minute of the 1 o'clock hour, 1:27, 45, somewhere in there, the clouds moved for 5 or 6 minutes. There was one brief little cloud that came over during totality. It was spectacular. I was there with astrophysicist Paul Wallace of Common Good Science fame, and people from both Piedras Negras and from Eagle Pass, and it was just tremendous. You've never seen a totality.
I have not, and I decided I had really gone back and forth, and I decided that I would stay here at the house and experience 98% totality as opposed to 100% totality.
Why not?
Which was about an hour away. And Goodness. I think I will deeply regret this probably the rest of my life. I mean, it was cool. It was weird and in like an enjoyable experience to feel the temperature drop, to see the, you know, the light change. But I know that an hour away, I could have been in the path of totality. And now part of the reason why I didn't go is because, you know, there'd been a lot of talk about how there was going to be 1.5 million people visiting the state of Arkansas. Our roads would be overrun and traffic would be unbelievable, that, you know, it would just be an absolute nightmare. So much so that our governor declared a state of emergency here in Arkansas. I'm just transitioning right into the stories,
yeah.
Doug.
Yeah, I'm going to drag us back into the eclipse, but go ahead. You go right down.
Yeah, so much so that Sarah Huckabee Sanders, our governor, declared a state of emergency in anticipation of the eclipse happening. And by all reports.
Yes. Not a problem.
Everything was fine.
Everything was fine.
Traffic was, you know, normal.
Not a problem.
Yep. Over and over and over again, friends of mine reporting from various towns where they had gone to get into the path of totality. You know, reporting that, like, hey, restaurants are not overrun.
Yeah.
You know, everything's good.
There was no emergency to be stated.
No. And, you know, it's interesting. There's like, Sarah Huckabee Sanders is just bad at this job.
Yeah.
She's bad at being governor. Yep. And there's a lot of, and she's actually getting a lot of blame right now. There's people that think that like her declaring a state of emergency scared people from coming.
Yeah, kept to people like you from going out to the restaurants and stopping for a little lunch on the way, maybe buying a little gas, like feeling the economy. Why Republicans continue to want to decimate the economy by scaring people is just hard to wrap your head around.
Yeah, and not just people like me that would have driven an hour. But it was a factor when I was talking with Vanessa about like, hey, should I go? She's like, oh, traffic's going to be terrible. There's going to be tons of people out there. Because that's what we had been told. Turned out it wasn't the case because Sarah Huckabee Sanders is just bad at this.
Yeah, look, we've all been bad at jobs. I added one of my first jobs was at Fuddruckers, a little restaurant.
Oh, Did you eat the kangaroo?
I don't know didn't if that's an expression or if they actually have kangaroo on the menu, but
didn't they have kangaroo burgers at Fuddruckers?
Not that we ever saw here in Golden Valley, Minnesota.
That was a thing.
We weren't eating kangaroo.
Tell your story. I'm going to the Google machine.
Are you sure you haven't conflated somehow Outback Steakhouse with Fuddruckers and ended up with a kangaroo, Ozzy? I don't know what's going on. Look, Sarah Huckabee Sanders, you know, is having a tough run. It's a tough job. Doesn't fit her. I wasn't qualified for my job at Fuddruckers. I've done some other jobs that I barely squeezed by getting them done. Even just basically showing up and getting the job done. And so, you know, I quit those jobs, though. I quit at Fuddruckers. Mm-hmm. And I did learn a lesson about people quitting jobs. One of the guys I was working with was fired by the boss at the start of his shift, and then the boss asked him to finish his shift. He put his hairnet under a person's hamburger on the bun on the way out. I was standing right there when the guy came back with this terrified look on his face, a bitten into hamburger and a hairnet, and I was like, oh yeah,
because he had been fired.
Yeah, and then fired, and then they let him work for 4 hours just doing things to people's food because he was out of his mind. Yeah, yeah. So I did learn that lesson, so that was worth it. But I wasn't good at the job, and Sarah Huckabee Fitzsanders probably isn't good at her job.
You know, she's not.
And her bosses are going to have a chance to make that determination in a big board meeting called a vote.
Mm-hmm. If she even makes it to that, because, you know, she might end up as Donald Trump's vice president.
Well, she won't have a chance to be good at that job either.
Yeah. Speaking of running mates, here, look at me making another transition. Speaking of running mates, we're going to get another vice presidential candidate today. We got Nicole Shanahan a week or so ago, who is Robert Kennedy Jr.'s
yep.
running mate. We've got Kamala Harris, who is yep. Joe Biden's running mate. Cornel West, who is running as an independent for president of the United States, is going to be announcing his running mate today.
Do you think it's going to be a woman?
Yeah.
My guess that all the candidates running are going to have a woman on the ticket. I think we're just now to a place where if you don't, that becomes the obvious mm-hmm. the obvious thing.
Yeah. Do you have any predictions?
No, I have no idea. I have no idea what Cornel West would want. I have no idea why Cornel West is running. I mean, I'm glad for anybody to run for president. Good enough. I mean, the American people can make their choices and, you know, not bothered by that. Don't know why these people are spending their time and energy on it, but it makes sense to them. So all the power to you, you know.
Yep. I did see a picture of a Facebook friend of mine, AJ Smith, who was with Cornel West yesterday. Okay. So fingers crossed that it's AJ Smith. Fingers crossed that it is. Yeah.
Well, if an independent candidate who's more progressive than Joe Biden and wants to run because Joe Biden isn't progressive enough on progressive issues doesn't go with a woman, I just think it's going to be a conversation point no one's going to want to have. And there are a lot of women. There are as many women capable of being vice president and president as there are men. So
probably more.
Could we?
Is it okay?
Normative.
Is the question here is not, is it going to be a woman? Is it going to be, you know, is it going to be someone we've heard of?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And who gets included in the we that we've heard of them? Because somebody will have heard
you
of this
and me,
person, but you and
you
I.
You and me. I mean, I had never heard of Nicole Shanahan before she was rumored to be RFK Jr.'s running mate.
I had never heard of RFK Jr. though before it was rumored that RFK Jr. was going to run for president. So
yeah, but he's got a name that kind of sounds familiar. I had heard of Kamala Harris. I had not heard of Sarah Palin before she was named as John McCain's running mate. My guess is this is not going to be someone we know.
Yeah. I bet I bet that's right. I bet we'll have to Google the person and find out what they've done. Well, look, if people are talking about the presidency and it's about something other than how horrible Donald Trump is, I guess that could be good for just the spirit of America. Hey, can I get back to this eclipse? I just want to finish up one thing and transition into it. I mean, I don't want to
run. I seamlessly went into two news stories.
You did. It was great. It was well done. It was well back. Now I'm going to circle back and drill down as they do in the business world. The governor of Texas has put a target on the back of Eagle Pass, Texas, a small little border town, has taken over their park, has put the National Guard from not only Texas, but from Florida and from South Dakota and from other places in place. Has lined the banks of Eagle Pass, Texas, with shipping containers, railroad shipping containers, wrapped it all in razor wire. And when you're on the Mexico side looking over, it just looks like your neighbor that can't take care of their property. You would call the officials to say they've got to clean up the yard over there. It's so ridiculous. And they shut down the park. So no parties in Eagle Pass, Texas, no celebrations over on the Mexico side. Party started at 6, went till 2 in the morning. Next day, it was one of the most fun nights of my life, the night before the eclipse. So fun. And the contrast, Eagle Pass, Texas was supposed to be the center of the eclipse in the United States. They had planned a music festival that they were anticipating 30,000 people to attend the music festival in the park on the river. Governor Abbott shut it all down. They sold 2,500 tickets. Eagle Pass, Texas had already outlaid all the money. The thing you're talking about was supposed to happen in Arkansas was also supposed to happen in Texas. Hardly a person there. I mean, we ran into a few, little handful, but no more than you would on any other random day. Yeah. It was just watching the choices of governors to damage their states is remarkable. Yeah. And these Republican governors with their overstretching power demands, you know, taking over parks, telling the federal government what they should do, calling states of emergency because it's in the governor's authority. They're just, little power. They say they want smaller government, less interference, but they really love the power when they can roll it out. They just they just adore it. And so it was really super sad. But it didn't stop the fact that when the total eclipse happened, the totality, the difference.
Yeah.
I'm not rubbing it in, Rob. I just want to say.
I know.
Again, the difference between 98% was that's cool. When it hit 100%, I was speechless.
Yeah.
Then I FaceTimed my wife. Then I turned on my camera. And if anybody wants to watch a guy watching an eclipse.
Riveting. Yeah.
And then at the end of it, I literally had to go over on the banks of the river and sit down. I don't know how, why. It was just so much. I wasn't teary, but I literally, truly had to go and sit down. Other people around too were just like, oh my gosh, what is going on right now? Like, it was something in the human experience of seeing the sun just have a halo from the, it was truly great. And maybe other people have other experiences. And then my eyes went back across the river and I thought, Greg Abbott can even literally screw up a lifetime astronomical event.
Yeah. Well, you know, we're what, 21 years away from this happening again, something like that.
In the US, you could go a lot of places in the world to find one if you need to.
Yeah. Yeah. The path of totality will once again, in 2045 go through Arkansas. And this time it will actually go right over my house. And I live in the path of totality for the 121 years from now. So fingers crossed that I'm still around and living here. And
living there. Yeah. Yeah. You know, and that you don't have to drive an hour because we already know.
Yeah.
Hey, you know what else it did? It totally changed for me the meaning of that number one hit song from 1984.
Well, I was going to ask you this question. What was your go-to song for the eclipse? Because mine might have been a little different. You go with Total Eclipse of the Heart?
No, I didn't have one. There was no music being played. I stood in the river and wrote a song about the Rio Grande River, but that was it. But we all agreed, anyone that was around where we were, we went to kind of a little more secluded place. Look, no music, none of that.
Yeah,
This is all attention. Yeah. So,
when you didn't do it. Yeah. But okay, not during the eclipse, but did you have like a little song in your head? Was it Total Eclipse of the Heart?
It was not. No.
No.
I really didn't. I didn't have one.
Mine was not Total Eclipse of the Heart. Nor was it anything by Pink Floyd like Kimberly had. Mine was U2 song Staring at the Sun.
Ah.
Okay. Yeah. Which has the line, I'm not the only one staring at the sun, which I thought was an inappropriate line for the eclipse. Nice.
it was magical. It was magical. I mean, you still ask yourself, was it worth all the effort and all that? And at this point, the answer is a resounding.
Yeah.
Yes, yes, yes. And something, I don't know, kind of shared nationally. It's not a lot of things shared. Like,
Vanessa and I were talking about that like this was one of those interesting experiences that was like a shared national experience. We've really, the more fractured our media has gotten, the more fractured our lives have gotten, we don't have nearly as many shared national experiences anymore. And, it used to be when there were three television networks, you pretty much everybody was watching, basically the same thing. Yep. It's just not that way anymore. And I'm not lamenting that. It's just an observation. Yep. This was one of those experiences that like everybody was in on, which was really cool.
And you don't want your governor screwing it up. It was pretty good. Hey, you know where things are not going well for a lot of people is the fact that Arizona Supreme Court yesterday made a determination that the state of Arizona can and should and will return to an 1864 abortion ban.
You catch yourself saying the date just because like 1864, like we're, oh my goodness sakes.
It was still a territory at the time. And they had a total ban on abortions in that territory. The Supreme Court said, because of Roe versus Wade, going back to that, people running for Senate, former governor candidates like Carrie Lake, were all in favor of returning the 1864 standards when Roe versus Wade passed. Mm-hmm. And then they watched the reality spread like a shadow of totality across the political system. And they were like, oh my goodness. People. So then yesterday, these same people who wanted Donald Trump to be elected so that Donald Trump would appoint people who would overturn Roe versus Wade. And when those people were appointed, and when they did to overturn Roe versus Wade, they cheered the fact that they would return to the 1864 standards, are now saying it's a terrible decision by the Supreme Court. The legislature has to get into gear immediately and stop this from happening. Even the most ardent backers of banning abortion are saying, we can't do this. Now, not all of them. There are some who are still very glad about this. And this turnabout and runaway from the very thing they called for is good news. Yeah. Good news that the most draconian attempts to try to take us back in time, not supported by the most conservative Republicans running for office. Just unbelievable.
Yeah. We're going to find out whether or not Republicans believe in their principles or whether they want power. Republicans have said over the years, they've said two things. They have said that abortion is a state's rights issue, and they have said that abortion is the murder of unborn children. Now, those two things could be true, but if you believe that abortion is the murder of unborn children, why would you ever leave it up to the states to decide? Why, if you believe that abortion is the murder of unborn children, why is that okay to happen in New York, but, you know, Arkansas or Arizona or Mississippi or Florida could decide not to do it? They have put themselves in a position where, like, it's logically, morally untenable. And that tension is playing out right now. So you've got Republicans who are, you know, saw the overturn of Roe v. Wade in the Dobbs decision as a great first step, which opens the door for them to then ban abortion nationally. And so we've got people like Lindsey Graham and many, many evangelical leaders, that are, you know, calling for a national abortion ban. And what we see is they were disingenuous about the states' rights part.
Yeah, that's right.
That's, and then you've got other Republicans who are looking at the situation and saying, oh, wait a minute, this issue is going to destroy us in November. And we've seen it over every time abortion has been on the ballot since the Dobbs decision, whether in Kansas or Ohio, Virginia, Illinois, other places, it is over and over and over again been a massive defeat for these, you know, extremist anti-abortion policies. And so what you have is there's a large group of Republicans that are now saying, wait a minute. And Donald Trump included. We need to leave this to the states. Because they know that any national push for an abortion ban is going to tarnish the Republican brand even further and make it more difficult for them to win elections. And so what we're finding with those Republican pro-life leaders is that they were disingenuous about the murder part of the argument. Now, when you leave it up to the states, you open the door to the most radical decisions to be made. Yep. Like in vitro fertilization needs to be outlawed because all of those frozen embryos are human beings. Or this law that we have on the books from 1864 needs to be, or a 10-year-old girl in Ohio needs to be prosecuted. Like this state's rights thing opens up Republicans even more. And so then you've got people like Donald Trump and now Carrie Lake backing off because this is politically, this is a horrible issue for Republicans. So it's, I mean, we have to defeat this stuff. We have to win at the ballot box. And the more Republicans do this, they're really in a catch-22 because if they leave it up to the states, they're going to get these horrible, like just totally extreme decisions. And if they go for a national abortion ban, like they just look like hypocrites, and that's a losing issue too. They nationalize a losing issue instead of keeping it, you know, confined to certain pockets in the country. They're really up a creek with this one.
Yeah, it's been, interestingly, it's been an unprincipled argument that Republicans and anti-abortion Republicans have been making about abortion all along. They sound very principled when they say it, but when you actually get into the conversation with them, as you're raising, the principles they're holding don't match, their behaviors don't match it, and it's been a desire they've had. They've just been convinced that abortion is bad and Roe versus Wade was wrongly decided. These two things just got glommed together. And now we're living in a world where they're seeing the ramifications of it. And as I think the Squirrely Prepper Lifestyle says in the chat, there was a particular senator in Arizona that was like, hey, we are not going back to a time when we are locking up doctors and women like the 1864 ban demands from us. And the fact that these states have not taken seriously their trigger laws to go back to previous laws, it just shows this was never principled. They didn't really believe it was going to happen, or at least the thoughtful people in those groups didn't think it was going to happen. And it's going to be real damaging to people who live in Arizona. Like, in addition to the political side of all of this, right? This isn't just like they called the wrong play and then, you know, their team is going to lose. These kinds of treatments of women and this kind of messaging that gets sent, it's really harmful. And it's really harmful to women in Arizona. And there's a lot of people really scared in Arizona right now. And they have a right to be. So this continues to reverberate. And this is why these elections matter so much. And I was just about to make a, but what about her emails joke? I'll somehow soften up by saying I was going to make that joke and then didn't, and then made a joke. But this is the kind of thing where people are like, it doesn't really matter about these other things. Everyone's all the same. Like, I'm just going to argue about this thing, or I couldn't vote for her, or just opinion about one particular topic. Honestly, and I know people don't incorporate a whole lot of other issues into their voting other than the ones that are sort of front and center for them. But anytime we can help people to just realize that the current spate of Republicans and Republicanism with the MAGA virus at the center of it is not intended to make things better in this country. It is intended to pull back on government power and to unleash a torrent of bad ideas upon the American people and the planet. And there is so much going on in this election. Rob, might be enough for someone to think it's the most important election of our lifetime.
One of these is going to be.
It's almost as if, you know, we're like, okay, it wasn't the last time. We're like doomsday prophets.
Yeah.
Okay, didn't happen last time, but this next time, this could be the most important, or perhaps every election.
Doug, important. Doug, this isn't on the list of topics to talk about, but we got breaking news on Twitter right now on X. There's
shutting
video
it down, and Elon Musk is going to apologize to the American people.
No,
Okay.
There is Kevin McCarthy, former Speaker of the House, on some kind of, you know, boring C-SPAN show, being interviewed. Here's the quote, direct quote: "I'll give you the truth why I'm not Speaker. It's because one person, a member of Congress, wanted me to stop an ethics complaint because he slept with a 17-year-old. Did he do it or not? I don't know."
So Kevin McCarthy is like, "Hey, I've been day drinking since I got out. I'm just going to tell you the truth. You know why? Because I was trying to get the pedophile to have to mess up for his thing and his ethics complaint."
I'm not Speaker because one person, a member of Congress, parenthetically Matt Gaetz, wanted me to stop an ethics complaint because he slept with a 17-year-old. Then he says, "Did he do it or not? I don't know." Oh,
I mean, this is what we've been chatting about and chattering about for 2 years, 2.5 years. Yeah. If someone were to go back through these, scrub through these with AI, our conversations, there was a point where I think you said exactly that. This is simply about Matt Gaetz trying to stop the ethics investigation against him and trying to send a message while he can. Any speaker who supports an investigation of my ethical misbehavior is going to suffer the same fate. That's totally,
It makes you wonder what ethics complaint has been filed against Marjorie Taylor Greene.
Yes, yes. What has she got? What has she got up her old ethics sleeve?
What, just a shocking statement from Kevin McCarthy.
Wow.
Wow.
I mean,
that phrase is overused now, saying the quiet part out loud. Yeah. Like, this is something we all knew, but for him to outright say it, shocking.
And to say it in the way that he is, this is the only reason. It wasn't the other stuff at all. There's also stuff that Kevin McCarthy has said about, like, look, Democrats are killing us because they have ideas and we don't. Like, he's just saying all the things that others have said. And this is what makes the man so pathetic. If we could just not beatify him here. Beatify him? Is that a word? Make us a political saint out of him. He knew that this was the reason. He waits a year later or something like that before he brings it up on a C-SPAN show, on a boring old C-SPAN show. He could have stood right there. He could have stood right there and pointed at Matt Gaetz and said, "Matt, I know why you're doing this, and I'm calling it out right now." Wouldn't do it. Yep. He lets the country go through everything the country goes through, which was just terrible.
It's the same thing with all of these, you know, there's all these stories now about no cabinet member from Donald Trump's administration supports him. None of his former staff support his candidacy for president. Why didn't you say something then?
Yes.
You know, like, why did you not walk out into the White House briefing room and start saying the guy in that office there is a threat to democracy and the country?
Yeah.
And see, like, so, you know, these
over and over and over. And I'm not saying Democrats are any better. Okay. So fair enough. Maybe Democrats, are not going to stand up and burn it all down to tell the truth either. I don't know. We haven't been faced with that. Well, maybe with this Menendez thing in Pennsylvania, maybe Senator Menendez in New Jersey. Thank you. That been a little quiet. I mean, Cory, who was it? Cory Booker, I think, was out on front of this. And then,
I think John Fetterman,
has been out, but pretty quiet overall. Like that guy is guilty over decades of this stuff. And not a word. But also, he's not bringing down the Senate. He's not going after Schumer or something. The fact that McCarthy wouldn't bring this up and tell the truth then and now feel so emboldened to tell it now. And also, he's trying to burnish himself a little bit. Like, maybe I didn't mismanage Matt Gaetz. he should have, could have, should have dealt with this all a long time ago. Hey, couple things that are going to be big in our political conversations for the presidency. One of them is inflation, and apparently it ticked up 0.2% from a year ago, 3.2% inflation this year to 3.4% inflation, primarily driven by housing and energy costs. And that's enough for people to believe that the Fed, now this 0.2% difference between last March and this March, is enough for people to believe that the Fed won't cut interest rates. It's just bonkers, right? Like, I know I'm not an economist. I don't even play one on Wednesdays, only on Thursdays. There's a big reason why rental costs are up, and a lot of it had to do with the freezing of raising rates and being able to evict people in 2020 through 2021, mm-hmm. and for some places 2022, where states and localities had to protect renters, and landlords lost a bunch of money. So they're ticking up. They're ticking up rental price. That's not because something's out of whack. That there's just a balance going on here, and we just cannot seem to figure out in this country how to let prices on some things move and not just freak out to a level that is, a bit overdone, I would say.
You ever been cruising down the highway and all of a sudden you see like the brake lights on ahead mm-hmm. of you, and you're like, now you're stuck in like long traffic, and you finally get up to the end of where, like, you know, where things are easing, and you look around and there's no accident. Yeah. There's no cop pull. There's nothing. Now, what happens in traffic is, when something happens, it causes everything to slow down. Yeah. And then that the effect of that lasts. I think there's some kind of name for this, which I don't know what it is, but the effect of that lasts so that like a long time later, like even though everything's been cleared away that caused that, like the effect is still there. And and that's what we have here. Like, you're absolutely right. So I think there's two things. One is you're absolutely right on the cost of housing being the result of what happened during COVID. And then I think the other thing, and there's been stories lately at the Saudi, you know, Saudi Arabia and the OPEC nations have been on the side of Donald Trump through all of, like, through everything. And they're, you know, in controlling the price of barrels of gasoline, of crude oil, drives up gasoline prices, which drives up the cost of the supply chain and shipping and cost of goods and all of it. Like, it that's not just about the price you pay at the pump. It's at the price that you pay for everything, because all of the stuff you buy has to be shipped in from somewhere, and all of that takes gasoline. So like when oil prices are up, that causes the price of everything else to rise. Yes, and there's a lot of talk lately that the Saudis in particular, who seem to be on the side of Donald Trump and betting on his return to the White House, are doing everything they can to keep the cost of energy higher, and that's going to impact prices.
100% agree. A couple of comments. The Squirrely Prepper says that as a shopper, I find the price of such things as pasta to stay higher than normal. And then Alex has this great little retort that rents and costs of housing and homeowners and car insurance are outrageous. I'm not convinced most of it's justified. I think a lot of it has to do with greed. I mentioned last Friday when we did this podcast that if you haven't yet, I like a podcast called Stuff You Should Know. Mm-hmm. And they did one on greedflation last week. And they talk about grocery stores in particular and manufacturers of food products. And there is no debate in economics that of the three areas that economists look at what causes prices, there's the cost of the products, there's the cost of the labor, and then there's the profits that the businesses need to get. And these are the three big buckets. Only the profits side has gone up. In fact, labor costs during COVID and just after have gone down. And it's not all supply chain issues, which would give you the ingredients cost. Sometimes there's little tick ups there, but it was all in the side of profits. In fact, there's recordings of people for big food manufacturers, you know, the General Mills types, ADM, these types, that saying, look, we've needed for a long time, we've needed a price increase at grocery stores. We haven't been able to get there because competition has been too high. This is our chance, COVID, to adjust up, and the country will normalize to this. So we're going to make this big leap. Just saying it to investors and to their and to their boards. This is what we're doing, and people are just going to accommodate to it. So some inflation just happens because of the forces, and some of it happens because people in certain industries are making overall adjustments. And frankly, on rents, I was a landlord for a long time. I grew up in apartment complexes. Shelly and I lived in apartment. I'm very familiar with apartment complex prices in a metropolitan area like where I live. They didn't go up for a long time. There was a long time where $750 to $1,100 would get you an apartment. And now that's, you know, doubled or something. And it just sat for decades, way too low, way, way, way too low. Now, I'm not saying it's good or bad. I'm just saying it didn't follow inflation. That's what I mean by it's way too low. People are making adjustments for all kinds of reasons, and inflation is not out of control. Greedflation is a real problem. The government has to figure it out. But all of
and
this,
none of it is Joe Biden's fault.
There we go. None of it. I mean, the thing that would be Joe Biden's fault is that more Americans have more money. More Americans have more jobs. More money is being invested from the federal treasury in things that matter in this country, infrastructure and all the rest of it. That's Joe Biden's fault, that more people are working, more roads are being fixed, and more investment is happening in this country.
Yeah,
fully to blame for that.
And you know what else Joe Biden
squarely on the old boy's shoulders.
Yeah, yeah. And know what else?
What?
He should just get rid of student debt. Just student loans.
You're on fire.
Just wiped out.
Your transition game is top notch.
Popping.
As Biden backs more student loan debt relief, the headline says, the right eyes another court fight. You know what I love about Republicans in today's political scene? They love themselves an unelected judge to be making decisions about policies. They're just all about the unelected activist judges.
Yes, an activist judiciary that can strike down what they don't like. So, you know, Joe Biden's doing this for a couple of reasons. Number one, because it's a good idea. And number two, because he made a promise that he would eliminate, I can't remember what the numbers were at this point, but a lot of student debt. Mm-hmm. And one of the big criticisms of him has been that he hasn't exactly followed through with that. Now, he has tried at various points to do it incrementally. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of folks who have wanted it just to be slashed and done with and let the big fight happen. He's taken a more incremental approach. This is another incremental step towards that. I think that, you know, I would tie two things together. One is that this strikes me as a political move on Joe Biden's part and his team. I'm totally in favor of it. I think it's good policy. It's a good idea. But it strikes me as a political move because at this very moment, Joe Biden is losing support amongst younger people because of what's happening in Israel and Gaza and the support that the U.S. has provided to Israel. And I think what Joe Biden is trying to do, his campaign is trying to do, is trying to blunt the loss of that support by rolling out more student loan forgiveness as a way of enticing young people back into his corner. Good. I think it's good policy, and I think it's good politics.
Mm. Yeah, I wonder if, I guess my sense is it has less to do with, this is something we've been working on since we came in. We're going to keep pressing. It's going to have good political benefits. Like how much of it's the political benefits is the motivator or the cause or having to do with the timing, and how much of it is they've slated these calendar of responses to the, the fact that they weren't able to accomplish what they wanted to because the Supreme Court, you know, turned them back on that. Then they had to go back and figure it out again. And look, this is the kind of thing, in my view, that's going to make someone feel better about the vote they're going to make for Joe Biden or feel better about not voting for Joe Biden from the other side. I don't think it's the kind of issue that makes someone say, okay, now I'm going to vote for the guy. I it doesn't feel to me, it feels like it's all kind of in the supports, in the boosting people feeling good about it. There's just a lot of issues that I think for people are like,
I think that's better, true.
I feel worse.
I think that could be the case. I think you're underestimating the dissatisfaction that younger people have with Joe Biden.
Oh no. Yeah, for sure. No, I'm not at all under, yes. I just don't think it's enough to make someone move. If they're like, I don't know, if the 4 million people who get relief from this
I hope I'm on that list.
All were movable. It might actually make a difference. The numbers are actually pretty small. The number of overall, I mean, I know the numbers are big, and you know, if you're one person impacted, you know, that's one's a big number. But overall, these kinds of things are fractional. And honestly, there's a piece of me that's like, I'm glad we're figuring this out to relieve student debt. It's a big deal. But shouldn't we be figuring out why there's student debt in the first place? And shouldn't we be approaching some other issues rather than, you know, sliding in with the sandbags just in time to stop the big storm? I don't know. It just feels like the kind of thing and they've been working on it. I mean, Barack Obama was the one who pulled the federal back student loans back into the federal government because they had all been sort of distributed out to private banks and stuff, you know, and he pulled it all back in. Like, they've been working on this for a long time, but not really working on how we think about our economy and how we fund education overall. Like, it feels like one of those things that the more you get into it, you're like, well, why do we have this problem in the first place? Kind of thing. Well, as you mentioned, one of the big questions for Biden is Gaza. And this headline from today in Vanity Fair says, in Wisconsin, Joe Biden can't escape the war in Gaza. No, look, it's a big deal. They've moved a lot. If you were to take where the United States government is and where this administration is on the support of Israel's violent attacks on Gaza, they've moved a long, long way. Not far enough for a lot of people, and probably will never go far enough for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. But it's pretty clear that there's been big debate inside the decision makers, and these are indeed thorny issues. But if by November the U.S. government is not either in full hostility to the Israeli government or hasn't stopped this from happening, that's going to be a real problem for Biden, and should be, because this is one of the things that we all, you know, sort of said, oh, and a bonus what you get if you elect Biden is, you know, you don't have Trump anymore, you have a sane person, you have someone who has competency, and as it turns out, on international affairs, he's actually going to be ready for that one. You know, if you buy the big SUV, that one time when you decide to go on the bike trip for the family, you can put five bikes on the back on this one. You know, the one time you need it, this is the time. He better pull it off, and he better do it before August.
Yes.
I mean, I would have said back, you know, a while ago, he better do it before April 9th, but that didn't happen. So.
Yep. Totally. In complete agreement with you.
Well, then, is that a good place to stop?
It's a good place to.
All right. Hey, thanks. Thanks for all of you. Squirrely Preppers dogs have popped up, so they've got to go.
Yep.
But Alex, Kimberly, Shelly B.
Yeah, but
Shelly B. Shelly B. and I are buddies, and we're also shared fans of The Stuff You Should Know, and are going to go see them live. And she heard the call out. Shelly, nice to see you on here. Nice. That's fun.
Joanne
Yabitz. All of you, did we miss anybody? Sorry for all of you saying they popped in earlier and we're like, man, we're late. Well, partly because we've been very hit and miss over the last few weeks, and then we're doing politics on Wednesday and started at 9. I mean,
just all over the place. We're completely unreliable.
We're doing our best. And what do you do when your best just isn't good enough? That's the question. People always just, you know, teachers or whatever, be like, just do your best. Really? That's what we're doing here? Just trying? Shouldn't we get people who are better at this than me instead of me doing my best? Because there's people that are better at this. Yeah. Well, not this, Rob. You and I, this is our little cozy corner. This is our little comfort zone. All right. Anything else?
Nope.
Okay. Goodbye.